Good morning. This is Focus 580, our morning telephone talk program. My name is Jack Brighton. Glad you could listen. Before we get started here, there is a clarification about the Urbana schools. A lot of the schools are dismissing early today, of course, because of the heat. And even though the Urbana schools will be dismissing early today and tomorrow, all after-school programs are still on. So we want to pass that on for the people in Urbana. During this hour of Focus 580, our guest is Greg Klein. He is a writer for the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette. He writes on a wide variety of issues, in particular, often about technology and computers. And that's what we'll be discussing during this hour. This is a sort of consumer-oriented or user-oriented program on computers. We won't talk about robotics and the implications for society unless something bizarre happens and takes us in that direction. This is more practical. Any questions you have about computers, computer peripherals, products, software, hardware, etc., and how to use them, operating systems, etc. We'll see if we can stump Greg Klein during this hour and try to get you some good advice in the process. If you'd like to join us, you can call us around Champaign-Urbana at 333-9455. That's 333-WILL if you match the letters with the numbers. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you hear us around Illinois, Indiana, parts of the other states, where our signal reaches, 800-222-9455. Again, around Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL. Anywhere else, 800-222-WILL. Good morning, Greg Klein.
Good morning, Jack.
Thanks for being here again.
I'm glad to be here.
Good. Well, just to start, wanted to ask, what's new in computers? There's a whole lot. And how is Moore's Law playing out at Best Buy?
Moore's Law continues to play out, and the week before last, I was out at kind of a technology seminar at Caltech for reporters and television journalists, and the prediction I heard there and continue to hear from other places is that Moore's Law will continue to play out for probably the next decade or so. If folks don't know precisely what Moore's Law is, it essentially states, and I may be getting some of the numbers wrong here, but it essentially states that computer processing power will continue to double. I think originally the prediction was about every 18 months, and now I think we're down to 6 months. And it seems to be happening. I remember a year ago, really just right around now, I ordered a new PC running the Windows operating system, and it had a 500 megahertz chip in it. And now we've doubled that less than really a year later, and they're about to kick over even double here pretty quickly. So
that's amazing. And this is a real difference, is it not? I mean, it's not just, oh, it's a little faster.
A doubling is a real difference. Yeah. The interesting thing is that we say a real difference, but most people, in point of fact, probably wouldn't notice it a whole lot, depending on what you do. You know, if you do word processing, you use the internet, you're probably not going to notice that difference to a huge extent. But, you know, if you play games or do digital video editing or photo editing, that kind of thing, then it's a real boon.
Yeah. Well, along with the increase in the speed of the processors and, the hard drives are getting huge, or at least it seems to me. I remember one of the really nice computers I had, 10 years ago had a 20 meg hard drive.
And that was big.
Exactly. But the programs are getting bigger. And so you almost have to have a faster computer to run the new programs because they're writing the programs to use the capacity of the computer.
That's how they make sure they keep selling software and machinery.
Apple came out with some amazing new desktop machines and iMacs and portable computers. We bought an iMac about, a year and a half ago, and it seemed incredible. But then, 3 months later, there was something twice as good that came out.
Yeah, and those are nice machines. I think, a lot of people talk about the emergence of what's called a net appliance, a simple computer basically just for hooking to the internet, maybe doing a few other things. And I think that those can be a good idea for some folks who just don't want to mess around with any computer things. On the other hand, I think the iMac has been and continues to be just a great thing for people who are essentially computer novices and want to get hooked up to the internet and may find some other things that they want to do with a computer. You know, it's very simple. You got about three wires to plug in and you're rocking and rolling. The Cube, which is the little desktop, very powerful but small desktop computer they made, about a 7-inch square, is beautiful. It's probably not overly practical if you think you're going to try to expand in the future, but it really is a nice – I had a chance to road test one of those when I was out in California as well, and it really is a lovely – it's almost art as opposed to machine. But
That's neat. We have a call to talk with. Let's include them, and we'll welcome others. I'll mention again we're talking with Greg Klein. He is a writer for the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette. He writes on technology and computers and other things, and you can catch his column in the Circuits section, which is published every Monday in the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette. And we're taking your questions about computers and practical issues for people using them and buying them, et cetera. 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Anywhere else, 800-222-9455. Let's talk with a listener in Champaign on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
The differences between, in the IDE genre of hard drives, the differences between 7200 and 5400 RPM, do you think they're significant in a server setting? I mean, would it be wise to spend an extra $50, maybe $50 to $100 on a 72 rather than a 54 if I'm going to be using it on a high-traffic server?
I think in that instance it would probably be worth it to spend the money for the faster hard drive.
But does it really make a difference in how fast it's going to pull up like a web page or something if somebody – wouldn't it just be like in milliseconds? How do you really judge whether it's going to be faster or not?
Well, you can see it by feel in using different kinds of machines, and I think it would make some difference whether it's a gigantic difference or not. You know, I'm not going to swear to that, but it makes some difference because that's about the seek time of the hard drive, how fast it can bring up the data that it has stored there, and when you're talking about a web server situation, you've got a lot of files there. You know, every web page can contain a myriad of files, photo files, text files, any other things you may have that are elements of that page. So you are pulling a lot of stuff off a hard drive there.
In regards to processor versus memory, it's been my experience with different types of servers in the past, not web servers in particular. That's why this is a new field, sort of. That they're not that processor CPU intensive, and just running it with a 333 or something is fine, and maybe RAM is more important to get. But what do you think, especially like on a Windows server? Do you think processor is actually significant, or should I just stick to upgrading RAM?
I don't think, and let me backtrack here a little bit on the hard drive thing.
Okay.
And kind of thinking about it in my head. A lot of this depends on what kind of money you've got and, how tight you are on budget and that kind of thing. If that faster hard drive is the difference between more RAM or not, I'd go with the RAM. I'd always go with the RAM over the hard drive and the processor in the kind of case you're talking about, and in most cases, because it simply lets you do more with your computer there, have more things open at the same time, have more things.
Okay.
Going on.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Okay. Now, if people have basic questions about, a lot of people are pretty sophisticated at this point about the differences between RAM and hard disk space and the processor speed. But these are three components that are very important to the functioning of the computer. They are basically all the computer is.
Right. But, the important things anyway.
Yeah, except for the input outputs.
So you kind of want me to talk about what those are
just for basics.
Yeah. Think of it this way. The processor, when we talk about processing speed, like 500 megahertz, a gigahertz, or whatever, That's the brain of your computer. It's the thing that does all the shuffling around of that data and makes things happen. And the faster that can work, obviously the faster the computer can work, just like when you're foggy in the morning, you work slower than than you are when later on when you've had some coffee and you're awake.
Right.
The hard drive is a place where all your data, your software, you know, your web browsers, your games, your word processing program, all of that stuff, anything you make, documents you create, web pages you create, games you save. All that stuff gets stored on your hard drive. That's kind of like your mass storage space there. And, you know, it stays around when the computer is off and that kind of thing. RAM is also, in a sense, storage space, but it's active temporary storage space. It's where it's faster than your hard drive is, and your computer, essentially, your processor moves things into that fast storage space so it can get to it quicker while you're working with your computer. And then when you turn your computer off, that's temporary. It goes away. Your RAM clears out. And then when you start up again, you know, you start fresh.
Good.
In that way.
So the larger the RAM is, the more you can do quickly.
Right.
With the computer.
And actively, the more programs every time you open up a program, you open up your web browser, you open up your email program, you open up your word processing program. You take up some RAM. Things are waiting around in RAM there for the processor to make use of them. So the more RAM you have, the more things you can have open at the same time, ready for the processor to access quickly.
So when people go to a store or they're looking at a computer system on a mm-hmm. website or whatever, you know, they should essentially look at those three things.
Those three things are probably the most important things
yeah.
they should look at. In this day and age, you should also obviously be looking for a modem because you're going to want to be connected to the internet. And, you know, generally any machine you're going to buy off the shelf or even on the web is going right. to have that in it.
Yeah.
And it's going to be the fastest modem you can get because that's just the way things are done anymore. The one thing that is starting to appear in a lot of computers, but not all, and that people might want to start thinking about is an Ethernet or network card. Which is kind of different from your modem card because, you know, it's a fast way of connecting to a network, and it's the way that you now connect to things like cable modems and ADSL devices, which is a high-speed phone line thing, that are starting to become more and more common. You know, we've got cable modem service now available in this community. We've got some iterations of DSL and more coming, and I think that will become the way of hooking to the internet fairly quickly here in the next few years, the predominant way as opposed to just a plain old modem, which is a lot slower.
Yes, a lot slower. Yeah.
It's all about speed now.
Yeah. Well, very good. Then quickly, let's get on to our next caller. We have someone waiting on a cell phone on line number one next. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Good morning.
Yes.
I'm interested in putting video tapes on a disc. Recording them on a CD-ROM.
Uh-huh.
Is that practical at this point?
I guess it depends on how you define practical. Yeah, there are really plenty of ways to do it.
Can I do it on my regular home computer?
Well, that kind of depends on how new your computer is. Yes, there are ways you can equip even an older computer to do that. Will it be satisfying? That depends on, you know, how fast your machine is. Things we were talking about, how fast your machine is, how much RAM you have, how much hard drive space. If you look now at machines they're selling, which they are, both Apple and the companies on the Windows side are selling machines decked out to do home video editing and to put it on DVD discs or to put it onto videotapes for that matter. They're all fairly beefy machines. You're talking a 600-700 megahertz processor on the Windows side. Apples are 4 or 5 because they function differently and do better, even though the processor speed is slower. You're wanting a big hard drive because you're going to be, you know, video files are big that you're working with, so you want a lot of space to store those, and you usually need a pretty good chunk of free space because what your editing programs typically will do is create large temporary files as you're going through the manipulation process, so you need some space for those to sit around. And it takes a lot of RAM because those are programs that are intensive and like a lot of room to work in a fashion that you'll find pleasurable as opposed to frustrating.
Sorry, how much RAM did you say would be minimum?
Well, I would think that you want at least 128 megabytes of RAM. And in fact, if I tell people, talk to people about buying a new computer, you know, I say something along the lines of, well, you can get by with 64 megabytes of RAM these days, but look, RAM's not that expensive. The more you have, generally, the better. And 128 gives you lots of elbow room and makes your computing experience generally a lot more pleasurable.
I think we're going to have to thank the caller because we're getting into a noise zone there.
Lose him.
But hopefully that answers the question. If not, that caller is free to call back. And others as well, 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Toll free anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. And we're talking with Greg Klein, writer for the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette, about what's new in personal computers and Macs and all the other things that pertain. To talk a little bit about some of the basics for people who, and we don't have to talk about basics if people want to call in with other kinds of questions, but say you know a little bit about computers and you go over to a computer store and you see there's a machine that's a Pentium 3 processor, 500 megahertz. It's got 64 megabytes of RAM. There's another one over here. It's an Athlon 950 megahertz processor, and there's a Celeron. What are these chips? What's the difference between a Pentium and a Celeron, for example?
Well, both of those are chips made by Intel, which is kind of the dominant chip maker in the personal computing industry, at least at this point, probably for the foreseeable future. And the difference is not much for most people.
Yeah.
The Pentium, now in its third version, Pentium 3, Pentium 4, about to come down the pike here, is their power chip. There are certain things about it that make it better for heavy duty processing intensive applications like those video editing things we were talking about and that kind of thing. The Celeron is more or less a stripped-down Pentium. It has a few less features to make it somewhat cheaper so that it can be put in, you know, more consumer-oriented machines. But in point of fact, they both operate darn fast. And people doing most of the stuff that people do with computers, working on the internet, doing email, doing the web, doing word processing, even, you know, if you're not a heavy-duty video editor or a heavy-duty photo manipulator, are not going to really notice much of a difference. And you get a much better price for the Celeron than you do for the Pentium 3. And kind of the interesting thing is, the Celeron is even a popular chip with the people that are into gaming, which is a real processor-intensive activity, in large part because you can pump it up. You can make it run faster than it's listed at. So they're both fine. Athlon is made by Advanced Micro Devices, AMD. I don't know if I want to call it a knockoff, but it's an IBM compatible chip that a competing company to Intel makes. It's their new chip. It's pretty popular because it's generally less expensive than the Pentium, probably not than the Celeron. And you really won't notice much difference between the two. There are occasional incompatibility issues with AMD chips, but not so many that it makes really much difference to anybody. In a general sense, you know, that'd be a specialized case. So any of those you'd be fine with.
Good. And then, of course, the other family of personal computers is the Macintosh, the Apple computers, which is a totally different processor altogether.
Right, a totally different processor and a totally different operating system.
Right, right.
Obviously. Yeah, you know, Macintosh machines run on the PowerPC chip, which is made generally by Motorola and IBM. It's a different kind of chip. I don't know whether I need to go into the gory details right here or not, but let me put it this way, kind of in a simplified sense. Whereas the instructions that go to a Pentium chip are, and this is, you know, the combination of ones and zeros that are telling it to do things are complex. You know, they're long. If I told you to walk across the room and I was a Pentium chip, I might say, Jack, walk across the room, turn right, walk three steps forward, turn left, stop at the wall. And the way the PowerPC chips run, it's less complex. It's called a reduced instruction set, and we more along the lines of take three steps forward, turn left, take three steps forward, stop. And that allows those chips, even though they're that's one of the things that allows those chips, even though they're generally slower in raw processor speed. You know, they top out at about 500 megahertz now. It allows them to run as fast as for example, a Pentium chip. Half again as fast, or you know, fully twice as fast. So.
Okay, we have another caller to talk with. Let's go to them. This is a listener in Champaign County on line number 4. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Yeah, this is an Apple related question, and you had a column in the News Gazette about the DSL, and you assessed the cost of getting connected for a Mac is to be quite a bit more. Does that include the Beyond Beige Macs, because they do have Ether cards built in, Ethernet cards?
Yeah, in that particular situation, the problem is with the system that that the provider, who, as I recall, then was I think Ameritech, uses, and what it because of the way their setup works on a Mac, they require you to have what's called a router between you. Your Ethernet card actually hooks to the router, which hooks to the DSL modem, so to speak. And a router is kind of a separate little computer that handles network things. Again, I don't think it's necessary to get into the gory details, but that's where that extra cost comes in. It comes in for that router. Now, I'll say this. If you, and a lot of people around here do, if you have more than one computer at home and you're going to want to get them all hooked up, you may want that router anyway to handle that stuff. So the extra cost is... It wouldn't be so much extra in that case. But if you got one computer and it's a Mac and you're going to use that service, you have to have that router, and it costs some extra bucks, and it's kind of a hassle.
Now, the at-home service matches the Ethernet card more.
Yes. You don't have to go through that business to use the cable modem service we have here. It'll just a cable will plug from your Ethernet card into that cable modem.
I guess Jobs announced that the Equinox is actually the end of summer, as opposed to so that they will make their deadline of having the OS X Unix-based one out by summer. Have you got any advance on that?
It's supposed to be, as I read last night, September the 13th. That's not next week, the week after. They'll be releasing what they call the public beta. And that means it's a pretty finished product that they're going to put out there for free. I don't know. They may sell it for a little bit on a CD if you want to buy a CD. I'm sure you probably don't want to download it unless you've got a cable modem or DSL, and let people play around with it. And that will help them work out the bugs that are left in it, as there always are, and something is giant and complex as an operating system.
And as varied as the things that people hook up to.
Right. That's exactly right. And then early next year. Originally they were saying first of the year. Now it's early next year, so we'll see how that works out. It's supposed to be out in its final version and loaded on machines that you buy.
Could you talk? I have to hang up and listen off the, on the air, but are you following the Rambus crash and the Transmeta chip? I'd like to hear you discuss those if you've been following that.
All right.
Transmeta is really neat in that for portables particularly.
Right.
It's elegant design in that it shuts down a lot of the chip when it isn't using it.
So. Mm-hmm.
As well as other Linus Torvald, I guess, inspired thing. So I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Thanks for the call.
All right. RAM bus, I know a little about. It's a fast kind of RAM that some companies, I believe Intel among them, wanted to become the standard, but it's expensive. And so it's probably not going to become the standard now or as quickly as people thought or maybe ever. And again, it's one of those things where normal users just aren't going to notice the difference. Mm. It's not worth all the extra bucks that it costs. And it, you know, it may come down the pike and be cost effective and happen, but it's not anything to really worry about at this point. Transmedia is another company that's making a chip that's different from both the Intel and AMD and also the PowerPC chips. I don't know, a good way to characterize it as kind of an entire system on a chip in a way, and it's low power. So it's the kind of thing that people think will be, and this is really pretty new. There's not much that has this in it, that it uses this chip in it at this point. I don't know that there's anything commercially yet. There may be one or two things. But it's the kind of thing that a lot of people see appearing in increasingly popular handheld computing devices. Mm-hmm. And also all the little things that people think in your home appliances, like your coffee maker and refrigerator and microwave oven, that people think may eventually be hooked up to the internet. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting thing. You know, I'm a big handheld computing fan myself, and I'm always looking down the road to see what'll happen. And it looks like a thing that might really have an impact there. You could have a really powerful, much more powerful than now handheld computer that is usable because the Transmedia chip is so low power, so you're not draining. You know, the big question in handheld computers is always battery life, battery life, battery life. Every time you power it up, you suck more of those batteries up faster. And this may be a way to get a lot of power for not much taxing on the batteries.
Great. Hope that gives the callers questions. We have a couple other people waiting. We'll go next to a listener in Bourbonus on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi. Thank you. I have never owned a computer, but I'm going to be getting one in the next few months. And appearance is important to me. I'd like to have something that strikes me as being artistic and beautiful. So I'm looking at, but I don't want to sacrifice quality for that. And I'm looking at the new Mac. Is it G4 or B4?
G4, yeah.
And I think NEC has a model out that's really kind of striking. So what can you tell me along those lines, please?
Well, this is what I'd say. You're new. I think you said you're new to computing.
Yeah.
And you're interested in style as well as substance. And I'd tell you to buy a Macintosh. Probably an iMac or a PowerMac G4 Cube, which is about as stylish as you can get these days.
Right.
And I'd say that because I think despite all the progress that the Windows operating system has made over the years in user interface and ease of use, the Macintosh is still just plain easier to use for most folks. You're going to have less problems. You'll be able to do all the things, you know, that you want to do. But generally, because you'll have less problems, your experience will be more pleasurable. That said, it also depends, though, kind of on, you know, what uses you have in mind for your computer and what other kinds of computers you might interface with in a work sense or, you know, in a friends and family sense. And, you know, if you're in a work environment or a friends and family environment where everybody is using Windows machines, you might want to think of going in that route. And, you know, I'll say on the other side of that there are plenty of ways to survive with a Macintosh in a Windows environment. I do it. I know lots of other people that do it. You know, I have a Windows machine and a Macintosh machine at home that coexist peacefully. But it's just a lot easier if your whole environment otherwise is Windows to use a Windows machine.
What do you think about that NEC?
I don't know particularly the particular model you're talking about, but there are on the Windows side of things. They were initially skeptical about the whole iMac idea, which, if you know what an iMac is, it's the colorful computer that all-in-one computer that Apple sells. But when they saw them, those things selling in the millions, they got religion, and NEC and Compaq and Hewlett Packard and some of the other big players there are all making alternatives to those plain beige Windows boxes that like I have at home now. So you can find a stylish Windows computer these days without much problem.
Well, I've also been advised that a way to consider is to have a local expert put together a package for you, and we do have somebody like that here in the Kankakee area.
Right. I don't think that's a bad idea at all.
Well,
and generally, I had my PC put together. I spec'd it out and had it put together. Generally, it may cost you a little more. It may cost you, $100 more or something like that. This is what I found in my experience a year ago in doing this. It probably cost me $100-$150 more than it would have cost me to buy something similar off the shelf. On the other hand, the things that I bought off the shelf wouldn't have had one or two of the components that I wanted in it. I got exactly what I wanted. And when I have problems, I know who built it. I know where they are. And I have somebody to talk to about it.
Right. Along those lines, I don't know if you're familiar with the mail order stationery house called Levenger, but they offer a wooden framed monitor and a wooden framed keyboard.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. to get back to my original theme, they're very good looking.
Yeah.
But I haven't been able to get specifications from them. And I was just hoping that you were familiar with that and could say, yes, it's really a good thing.
No, I don't really know anything about that. And this is you said it's a stationary company. I take it's like an office supply company, and they probably put computers together. And if that's the case, it's probably okay. I don't imagine there's a big problem with it. I generally like in the way of having someone build me a computer to deal with people that's their primary business. They build computers. That's what they do for a living.
Okay.
So.
Well,
but,
thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, and good luck.
Thanks, Jack.
Okay. We have another caller, and I'll get right to them, but there's just one point that I was going to ask you about, and something you said sort of, made it seem timely. In dealing with, if someone doesn't have a lot of experience with computers, they should know one thing that it seems, at least in my experience, to be true, and that is that whether you get a PC or a Mac or any kind of computer you get, all computers are going to crash.
Yeah.
And if you know that ahead of time, it's not like you buy a car. You don't expect the car is going to crash, like 8 times a week or something like that.
Right.
A computer is going to do that. And if you just know that, maybe you can avoid being frustrated when it happens.
Yeah, it's inevitable. It doesn't matter what kind of machine you have, that occasionally things are going to go wrong and you're going to end up having to restart it. But so the trick is to get yourself a system, whether it's a Mac or a Windows machine, that is set up right in the first place, and then that you maintain at least in a reasonable fashion over the time that you use it, so that you minimize those kind of problems, and to back up the stuff that's important to you, so that if a crash causes a big problem, you don't lose stuff.
Very good. Let's go on to our next caller. This is a listener in southeastern Illinois on line number 4. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Yes. Another question from your question. What is a crash? I keep hearing about a crash, and they say the Windows particularly is supposed to be susceptible to crashing.
Well, let me think of a good way to put this. A crash is when your computer that has a brain lock, essentially, and everything comes to a crashing halt. And you can't do anything until you restart the machine and let it go through its startup process and clean out all its pipes and come back, hopefully, ready to go.
Now, is this a complicated procedure that there? I mean, is restarting the machine easier with the Macintosh?
No, I'd say from the perspective of restarting a machine, there's not much difference between Macintosh and Windows machines. It's either a combination of keys, there are different combinations on the two machines, or pressing the reset button on the computer itself.
This is fairly simple, though, something that the computer user can do. It doesn't have to call in the person to put the computer together to do it.
No. It's something users can do and do, given the nature of personal computing all the time. And now, you know, there can be situations where you get a crash and it's some problem that you're not going to be able to solve by restarting the computer, and that's the point at which you might get into things that you need someone to help you repair. But you know, those are uncommon as compared to garden variety brain lock.
I had to leave the phone for a minute while you were talking to that last caller. Did you recommend that if he wanted a few problems that he would be ahead with the Macintosh?
Well, I always, and this is, you know, this is my personal preference. There are other people who wouldn't recommend this. I always recommend to people who are starting out with a personal computer. This is their first one. They want to, you know, they want to get on the internet. They want to do word processing. Maybe they want to keep their finances in order. I always suggest the Macintosh because it's easy to set up. The system is generally more stable, and over a period of time, they put a lot of thought into making it simple for people to operate.
Okay, and it is also supposed to be superior for graphics, is that?
Well, yeah, it's very popular and has been since its inception in the publishing industry and also now in the video editing industry. But that doesn't make a lot of difference to the general user. I mean, a Windows machine is going to look as good as a Mac to most people for most of the things that they do.
You spoke of the processor, the hard drive, and the RAM. Which of those is expandable after you buy the machine, if any?
In a sense, all of them are. In a practical way, the RAM is the easiest thing to do. It's something most people, after a while, will probably feel comfortable doing themselves. It essentially involves getting a card with the RAM chips on it, those memory chips that hold that stuff that I was talking about, and plugging it into a slot, a fairly clearly identified slot in your computer. The hard drive can also be expanded. Most computers come with, or a lot of computers come with, space to put in a second hard drive, or you can have the old hard drive removed, your data moved over to a new, larger hard drive, and that hard drive installed.
Is there a unlimited addition to RAM, or is it like, you know, do you get a bigger card to put in that slot, or is it one slot, or?
It depends on the computer. Most have at least a couple slots. All of them have some limit to the amount of RAM that they can take. It varies by machine.
I'm really talking about Macintosh here.
Yeah. That also varies by machine. The system, the operating system, I think now is up to the point where it can take a gigabyte or 1,000 megabytes of RAM, which most people are not going to need, by the way. As I said, if you got 128 megabytes of RAM, I think you're doing well at this point in the game.
You have your ROM CDs. Does every computer come with a thing that where you can play? You know, but the first thing that I want a computer for is the. I have macular degeneration. I can't read, and I miss being able to consult dictionaries and encyclopedias. So to have reference books is my first use for it. But I want to be able to expand later to other things if I.
Now let me ask you a couple questions here. Are you? You're going to be able to read this on the computer screen, right?
Well, no, I want to voice synthesize.
You want to voice synthesize. In that case, you probably want to think about a Windows machine. Because at this point anyway, and this may not be the case 6 months, a year down the road, but at this point anyway, the kind of software that you're talking about to read those things to you, you'll find a lot more of it and a lot more features in it that would fit what you're talking about on the Windows side than you'll find on the Mac side.
I talked to a recent guest on the Focus 580, and they recommended the Macintosh, said that they had a synthesizer built in with, I think, 15 or 20 different voices.
Well, that's true. Macs natively come ready to do sound, and there are parts of the operating system that will now speak what they're doing to you. But you're talking about software that reads what you have on your screen.
That's right.
And that is not the case. The built-in system, the built-in parts of the Macintosh system won't do what you're talking about. You'll need to get a separate piece of software to do that, and you'll find a lot more and a lot sophisticated of that kind of thing on the Windows side.
You will.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it used to be that you'd buy a Windows machine or way back when a DOS machine, and they wouldn't have sound built in. But that's not really the case anymore. You're not going to go to the store and buy a Windows machine that doesn't have sound built into it.
When I have a catalog, of course, my problem is that if I could read the catalog, I wouldn't need the stuff. But they have voice synthesizers, and they're, you know, outboard, and they cost about $1,000.
Yeah, and I think those are for a lot more complex purposes than you're talking about. essentially, I think what you want is a Windows computer with a sound card and some software I'll refer to it generically as screen reading software that will read the words that are appearing on your screen there, of which there are several different types.
Okay. Now, also, I'm wanting something that will read the words from a book on a flatbed scanner.
So you want to scan the book in? Oh, you want it to read from the scanner?
Yeah, read from the scanner.
Well, now you're getting into things that are somewhat beyond my knowledge and that will probably cost you a good chunk of change to do that. Where do you live?
I live in southeastern Illinois.
In southeastern Illinois.
Large city.
I was going to send you over to the Urbana Free Library where they have kind of thing you're talking about, but that probably won't do you much good.
I have no way of getting there.
Yeah.
The Windows and the Macintosh are entirely different systems. Do you have to have an entirely different flatbed scanner to feed into each one, or will a scanner feed into either?
It depends on the scanner. Now there's a lot of there are a lot of those that are cross-platform. It's something you need to look at when you buy one.
Okay, so that they don't necessarily feed in either one.
They may, but not necessarily. Yeah, it isn't a given.
Okay. Well, the more I learn, the more confused I get. I think that evidently the other guest misunderstood what I was wanting from the voice synthesizer.
Yeah.
So, thank you very much.
Okay, I hope we were helpful.
I think you were. Thank you.
Best of luck. We have just about 5 minutes left with Greg Klein, writer for the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette, taking your questions about computing and using computers and consumer issues, et cetera. We have two callers waiting. We'll try to get them both in. Next up, a listener in Pontiac on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi, thank you. I started out with a Macintosh SE way back, and that was an all-in-one computer. I've been through the LC and the 7100 and the 6100, and the thing I like about the Macintosh machine is when my LC, if I wanted to put in any hardware inside, I had to open it up and take out some screws, and the 6100, it doesn't even have screws in the back. You just open the machine up and put in what you need and take out what you need. But the reason I'm calling is I've kind of a second call ago about a cool-looking machine. I have ordered a new iMac, the new Indigo iMac, and they're only $800, but it's been a while. I've been waiting for shipment. Do you have any idea when the shipment might be on the new iMac that's coming out?
No. Hey, that's and you're not alone. Apple tends to announce its new machines at the big convention towards the end of summer, and they always say that at least some of them are available now, but available now is kind of a relative thing, and it tends to be a month or two down the road before some of them are actually available.
Now, as I said, it's only $800, and it's an all-in-one machine like the old SE used to be, only it's color, and it looks like it's a very cool machine, and
yeah.
They're so powerful now that compared to what they used to be, and inexpensive compared to what they used to be. One thing is that I have the built-in voice on my Macintosh. You have a choice of 15 or so different voices. I found that if you just cut and paste it or put it into simple text or something, it'll just read it right away. I'm fairly low vision.
Yes.
And, it'll read it quite nicely.
That is correct. But you have to do what you said there. You need to put it into something that it can read from. And this gentleman, I think, just wants to stick for example, a CD-ROM of the dictionary in his computer and have it read to him, or put a book on a flatbed scanner and have it read to him. Those are things that are going to require a little more.
I don't know how to do that. Yeah, I love your column, too.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. So in the case of the Mac, anything in simple text it can read out loud.
That's one of the things, and that's one of the programs it will read from.
Yeah.
And there are others. I don't have a list of them in my head. And there is some functionality like that. But it'll read alert boxes on the screen, the little boxes that come up with that tell you what's going
right on.
It'll read those and some other things. It really is kind of a nice – and Apple had not made – it's been in there for quite some time, and Apple had really not made a lot of use of it. But, this is going to be a thing that I think fairly quickly down the road here is going to be an integral part of computer operating systems, some voice-operated function. And they're starting to pay a lot more attention to it.
Okay. We'll squeeze in one last caller, listener Champagne, on line number two. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Yes, I just wanted to make a comment about the iMac. The ones that are around now have been around a while. I've had an opportunity to use maybe a dozen of them, and in every case I have found the keyboard to be very unsatisfactory, and surprisingly the mouse as well. At first I thought with the mouse that the particular one I had must be malfunctioning, but I found it on every one that I've tried.
Yes, and you are not alone. And the you and cry has been so vehement that Apple has seen the light. And in the new iMacs, there is a new fuller-sized keyboard and a new mouse that I think is just absolutely marvelous. It's an optical mouse. It means it doesn't have a little ball in there to collect lint. It works actually by a little light laser type of thing that's underneath that tracks the movement. And it's buttonless. You basically just shift it to do your clicks. And I think there are a lot of people that are just ordering the mouse and the keyboard because they think they're so cool and they function so well. Your problem is solved.
That's great. That's great to hear. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks for the call. And that's about it since we're here at the end of our time. Sorry, we have one caller we won't be able to include, but maybe we can do this on another day if you'd be willing to come back.
You bet.
You do a great job, so we'd love to have you. Our guest has been Greg Klein. He is a writer for the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette. You can see his column in the circuits section of the News Gazette on Mondays. And also, he writes in other sections in the newspaper, so I'm sure you can catch his articles all the time. Thanks for being here again, Greg.
Thank you.